shutting down a labor and delivery unit, tattoos and nursing, fighting medication errors, and we're going to take a look at anticoagulation lab values. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We have a lot of good stuff coming up, some great news articles I want to discuss with you, so I don't want to take too long here, but I do want to welcome everybody, especially the new listeners here to the show, and urge you to head over to nursingshow.com. Over there, you'll find links in the show notes articles for everything we've talked about. If you just click that tab for show notes at the top of every page in the site, you'll be able to go right to the most recent episode and then scroll down to see previous episodes. Find out what I'm talking about here, follow up on the links, and let me know what you think. I'd love to hear back from you. And of course, there are great ways to do that as well. Check back in with me using the comments link on every article. It's a great way to leave a comment right there on the site. You can also get back in touch with me. Just send those comments in to comments@nursingshow.com via email, and I will get back to you. I try to respond to every single comment I receive. So keep the comments coming in, whether it's an idea for another episode, comment on a previous episode, or yes, definitely send me in any corrections I need to make. We make mistakes here, but this is a community effort, and we try to make sure that the best information possible is presented. So if you hear something that needs to be adjusted, or you have a link that has a different point of view, definitely send that in here to me here at The Nursing Show. Time to jump into this week's news, and I'm going to lead off with a story I picked up over at the NewarkAdvocate.com. NewarkAdvocate.com. This is an Ohio newspaper. It's not Newark, New Jersey, but we are looking at a trend that I've seen in a couple of different places, and I thought I'd report on this article. The article's entitled "Nurse Gives Birth to Ohio Hospital's Last Baby." This is because some facilities, especially smaller facilities, are finding it necessary to close down their labor and delivery units, either because they have no physicians that are working in that facility anymore, the cost of labor and delivery and the cost of the insurance involved with labor and delivery, and this is considered a high risk profession from that aspect, has caused these facilities to start to shut down. This particular article, kind of a touching story, sad and bittersweet, about an actual labor and delivery nurse who was pregnant herself, and she was the mother of the last child born in the hospital. And so she got great care from her coworkers, but it also marked a change for this small community not having a local facility that could handle labor and delivery in-house. I'm assuming they still have an emergency department so they could do emergency care for this particular types of cases that might come in. But for people that are going to go have children in these communities where these facilities are shutting down their L&D units, we are going to have to send our patients elsewhere. And that's, not really providing care effectively and efficiently in some of these remote areas. It certainly seems like this is going to be a trend that continues as major corporations take over the running of hospitals and they start looking at these types of things purely from a bookkeeping standpoint. And is it a moneymaker? Is it not a moneymaker? Are we losing too much on this? Is it worth keeping in-house? A lot of companies, whether they're for-profit or not-for-profit organizations running hospitals, are looking at this type of change a lot. And we see this, I've seen this in eastern Pennsylvania. Some of the hospitals are actually shutting ERs down in the past, shutting trauma units down, saying no more trauma center in this facility. This is making a big change in the way we route people to certain facilities from the emergency medical services standpoint. You know, as a paramedic and a nurse, I see this from two sides, but it certainly affects the community's availability of care. And I'm curious what you think, if you've seen this type of thing happen in facilities in your area. Next up is a story I actually wrote an article on last week regarding tattoos and nursing students and nurses in general. There was an article I found on JoplinGlobe.com. This is from Joplin, Missouri. A nursing school in this area has changed their policy, or actually I think probably clarified or identified a policy where they will bar students who have tattoos that would be visible when wearing the standard student uniform, which would be short sleeve scrubs. And this policy was put in effect because, according to the university, there was a need to have their students be able to get jobs in any facility, and that because some hospitals have a policy barring visible tattoos on their staff, that this was something that was going to cause some of their students not to get jobs, and therefore they were not going to allow students in that wouldn't be able to find work in every facility. There's a lot to say about this, but it does go along with, a lot of the comments I got were from people with tattoos, obviously. And while I have nothing against tattoos personally, you know, it's not about you. It's about the patient. This is something that, you know, we have hammered into us in nursing school and continue to understand as we work through our careers as nurses, that it's not necessarily about us. It's about our patients and good care. And if we are able to cover up a tattoo or do something like that, I think it can help to improve patient care in some cases where patients may have a preconceived notion about tattoos. This is not something like a racial issue or a religious issue. This is a choice that someone's made. And when you make that choice to have a tattoo, you should understand that there may be social implications associated with that. You obviously are wearing it to get attention. Somehow, sometimes that attention may not be what you wished it to be. And that's not necessarily fair, but that is, I think, the way it is going to be for some time. And we need to be able to provide effective care for our patients. And if this somehow hinders because you want to show off a tattoo and it hinders patient care, is that really an appropriate way to stand up for your rights for freedom of expression? Now, I will say, I know this is a contentious issue, and I really do want to hear back from you on your opinion on this. Definitely send in your comments. You can do that by email, comments@nursingshow.com, or, you know, head over to the Nursing Show site, click the show notes tab, and get to this episode, and just go ahead and click on the comments link right there at the top or bottom of the article, and leave your comment there so that we can all see and participate in the discussion about this. And I'll have a link to my original article, and you can leave a comment there as well in the show notes. Finally, in the news this week, I found an article over at Reuters.com on the announcement by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S., to really try to get a coordinated effort together to deal with medication errors in facilities and outside of facilities, or medication misuse, also a problem. Now, we all know and have heard from Joint Commission reports and from our own facilities and organizations that medication errors are a huge problem. Hundreds of thousands of people every single year are injured or killed by medication errors. And this is certainly, in many cases, an avoidable problem where this has been an error on the part of the patient in some cases, and in other cases, on the part of healthcare professionals. And what do we do to combat that? We have efforts we use in-house, but when we're looking at either avoidable problems from a medication error or drug abuse or misuse of a medication from lack of understanding of the medication, what do we do to take care of this? The FDA announced a week or so ago that they were going to be working with patients, manufacturers, healthcare organizations, and healthcare professionals to reduce this problem across the board. And I like the fact that they're including patients and patient groups in this process, because I really do believe that we need to encourage our patients to be more active participants in their own care. I think so often it's easy for the patient to just lie there and be administered to. And why can't we go ahead and get them involved in the process? And this is really a nursing intervention. This really is our job to be in there and educate these patients, tell them about when they should be taking the medication, when they shouldn't be taking the medication, what kind of probable issues can come up, and to help patients that may need certain types of assistance, i.e. the elderly, who have a lot of medications to take on a daily basis, help them to have the tools available to make sure that they're taking their meds safely so that they don't forget to take a med or forget they already took it and take a second dose of a medication, which happens frequently. So there are things we can do here across the board, not just focusing on our own medication administration techniques and practices, but also focusing on patient education and providing good tools to the patients and the community at large. For the tip of the week this week, we're going to be looking at anticoagulation lab values. This is one of those things that we all need to refresh our memory on from time to time. And definitely, if you're a student, this is one of those things you're going to need to kind of have in your back pocket, because it's something that'll come up frequently throughout your nursing student career. And also, I think subsequently in your testing for the NCLEX exam and beyond into your nursing career. It really is an important issue, and definitely should be. It's one of those major issues when looking at safe medication administration, is understanding your anticoagulation labs. So what are we talking about here? Well, we'll talk about some of the medications that are affecting patients' coagulation values. We'll also talk about some of the reasons they're applied for therapy and some of the patient's own medications they may be taking on the side or some other things. We'll be talking about the lab value PT, the INR, or the International Naturalized Ratio, and we'll also be looking at the PTT, and we'll talk about what those initials all stand for again here in a bit. First off, let's look at the medications that we use frequently for therapy for patients that need to have anticoagulation therapy. Heparin is a medication that we usually see as our first line. It's an injectable medication, can be administered as an IM injection or as a sub-Q injection. Also can be administered as an IV drip, but we need to, of course, have very good handle on what's going on with our labs to administer this medication. Also, warfarin. This is a medication. My wife takes this. Those of you that have been listening to the show for a while know she had some issues with a pulmonary embolism a few months back. And so she's on warfarin therapy. The kids and I call it, time for mommy to take her rat poison, because that's what it is. I mean, it is the same thing when in high doses causes internal bleeding and death if not monitored. So this is something that we need to be very careful with administering to our patients, but it's been around for a long time and we have a good understanding of how to monitor this medication safely using lab values. Also, patients taking aspirin for just daily blood clot prevention can be affecting their labs. And there are also a lot of herbal remedies, natural remedies from a person's cultural background, also herbal remedies that might be sold in health food stores or in food supplements. And we need to be aware and ask the question what else the patient is including in their diet. They may not consider it a medication. They may consider it a vitamin or something like that. And you need to definitely have a handle on these types of additional meds or herbal supplements that a patient might be taking. So what are we talking about? Let's start off with our PT, the prothrombin time. And it really is time. I mean, it is the measurement how long it takes a sample of blood to clot. Clotting time is measured in seconds. And the normal time frame is considered about 10 to 13 seconds for the sample to begin to clot when viewed in the lab. People on anticoagulant therapy would be the patients that are taking warfarin. So the PT is used to monitor warfarin therapy, and it is usually considered 1.5 to 2 times longer is the range we're shooting for. So we're trying to extend the clotting time of the patient so that we can prevent the formation of blood clots, but we also need to make sure it doesn't get too long. So we aim for that 1.5 to 2 times longer prothrombin time or clotting time in this particular case. Now, this is being replaced by the INR, and that's because there's several different ways labs can arrive at this and formulate this particular number of seconds and measure it, and it was found that using some kind of an international standard would improve the understanding of what this lab value might be, and so the INR was formed. Now, the INR replaces the PT. It's the international normalized ratio. And to understand this, a ratio of clotting time to the norm value. In this case, a person with a normal value would be right around 1. So if we're looking for anticoagulant therapy, then again, we're looking at this as looking at people who are taking warfarin therapy, or Coumadin is the brand name. Target range of 2 to 3 on the INR. And this really corresponds to 20 to 30% higher clotting time in ratio. And this is how they arrive at this particular number. So we're looking at INR of 1 as normal and a target range for anticoagulant therapy of 2 to 3. Now, there have been some things I've looked up, and I wanted to bring this out. For some patients, they may have a larger value that is considered norm. Heart valve replacement is the one that leapt out to me, and they want to see in this particular source 2.5 to 3.5. And this just reminds me that you should be really looking at what your facility considers normal and what your facility is looking for in a standard ratio or a standard therapeutic range for these medications. Now, more things about the PT and the INR. We're going to use a blue top tube. Usually there is a small amount of an anticoagulant in the bottom of the tube to preserve it, help preserve it. And then it's taken to the lab and that is neutralized. And then they go ahead and perform the test. The levels can be affected by some things that the patient might be doing or consuming. So patients have a liver disease problem. Remember, the liver is our storehouse and manufacturer of proteins in the body. And so anything that would slow down the production of important proteins like prothrombin will increase the time it takes for the patient to clot. So liver disease is one of those things. And so a patient with a history of alcohol abuse, even if they haven't been identified with liver disease, you should be asking the question if this isn't something we want to look in further, get a look at liver value labs and see if we can see if there's any signs of liver damage. Also, there's some things in the diet. Vitamin K, which is the vitamin that assists with blood clotting. So if a patient's eating a diet high in vitamin K, they are going to affect their PT and INR levels. High fat diets as well will decrease the PT levels or INR values. So you need to make sure that you talk to the patient about their diet. In fact, many facilities will have a dietary guidelines. The most important thing is that the patient be consistent. If they want to eat a diet high in vitamin K or higher in vitamin K, and this is a lot of leafy green vegetables, we normally tell the patients that we want them to eat these things in good volume. Whatever they do, if they're consistent, then the values will be consistent once we get the levels dialed in and the drug dosages dialed in. And we should inform our patients that changes in diet could affect their clotting factors. Also, one thing that will affect it is time to get that sample to the lab. If it's going to be an extended time frame, it's advised to refrigerate or ice the sample before it goes to the lab. If you've got an extended time to get that to the lab, maybe you're taking the sample in a doctor's office and then sending it to the lab, or perhaps you know it's going to be a while till the lab is available. If you're in a small facility, maybe you don't have a 24-hour lab tech and you only have somebody come in as needed. That might be a situation where you need to adjust how you store these samples. Now, what about the PTT, also the APTT labs? This stands for partial thromboplastin time and activated partial thromboplastin time. And you may see either or both of these labs represented on a lab sheet when you get the patient's lab values back. Again, this is another part of the clotting process. And so this is looking at the ability of the patient's body to clot in a different part of the clotting chain. And this is the area where heparin is affecting the patient. And so this is the lab value that tracks the patient on heparin therapy. Normal range is 20 to 35 seconds for clotting time. And anticoagulant therapy, again, this will be for patients that are being are receiving heparin therapy. And our target range here is, again, 1.5 to 2.5 times normal. And so you would have a range on your sheet that you would be expected to monitor the patient for and want to keep on top of that for these patients. Now, PTT or the APPT, PTT will be drawn in the blue top tube. So the good news is you only have to draw one tube if you're just getting anticoag labs to be sent out. You can just go ahead and draw one tube. You can do the PTINR and the PTT in the same tube. PTT levels can be affected by a couple of different things. One thing is an advanced stage of cancer. Patients with advanced cancer, late stages of cancer, will experience a decreased PTT, and this is because of just the effects on the body of the cancer as it advances in some cases. And so this is something to be aware of. Diet also affects, again, vitamin K, anything that really affects the ability of the body to coagulate, such as liver disease, are going to be included here. Liver disease, the disseminated intravascular coagulation, and we've covered that in another episode. You can look that up, will also affect it. And this particular value, aspirin. So patients taking aspirin or any salicylates will include in increasing their PTT levels. Time to the lab. Again, make sure that you know how long it's going to be till you get this to the lab. And if it's an extended time, you should be refrigerating or icing your samples down. For those of you that want more additional information, you can check out the links and things in the show notes over at nursingshow.com for this particular episode. And of course, Nursing Top student members, you will have some additional study aids associated with this as well, including a video segment and student handouts from that so that you can bone up on this particular topic for your studies. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you need to check back in for the show notes for everything discussed in this episode. All of the news items, tip files, and other links mentioned are all available in the show notes for this and every other episode. And you need to follow up on the information because I can provide only general information here. It's your job to follow the links and look at the resources and see how they apply to your own scope of practice. I'll do my job here and get you as much information as I can. It's your job to follow up, make sure that the information gels with what you know and what you're supposed to be doing in your area. I'd like to urge all of you to comment and get back in touch with me here at The Nursing Show. You can reach me, of course, by leaving comments over at nursingshow.com. There are comment links at the bottom or near the top of every single article. You can also reach me by email, comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also get a hold of me over at Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. That's going to wrap up the show, and I will close out with some PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This week, a song by the band Winter Circle, and their song Streetlight Flicker. We've played this on the show here before and on my other shows, but it's one of my favorite songs, actually one of my daughter's favorite songs as well. So check it out. And if you like what you hear, follow the link in the show notes and let them know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. That's it. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, reminding all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
The street.